This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Politics Friday on WWNO New Orleans and WRKF Baton Rouge. And in the House to begin our conversation today are two people representing the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, the state's largest business lobby, and they are here to unveil LA 23, a strategic plan for our state. Jim Patterson, who's worked at LABI for 33 years and succeeded Stephen Wagespack as the person in charge, he's in the House. And Ted Abernathy, who's from North Carolina, who's the managing partner of Economic Leadership LLC, a consultant that has led the development of state economic development in places like Kentucky, Missouri, and Arkansas, and he lives in North Carolina. They are with us. If you'd like to join the conversation, Robin Dow is at the ready, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Jim Patterson is a graduate of Little Rock Central High School, and he was a high school classmate of a guy named Houston Nutt, who was a parade All-American quarterback back in the day when I was at Little Rock Catholic. And Ted Abernathy, I just found out, that's not a what I would call a common name. I asked him if he was related to Ted Abernathy. He said, that's my dad, the pitcher, the reliever, the submariner who pitched in the majors from 1955 to 1972. When I was a little kid, I remember him. He was a great relief pitcher. And they are here to talk about other matters other than where they went to high school and who their fathers were. But they have interesting backstories. And we're all about finding out what makes people tick. Again, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Jim, first of all, congratulations. You've worked at LABI a long time, and Stephen Wagespack got high marks, but decided to do something else. I hear he's running for governor.
I've heard that too. Came as a little bit of a surprise when he made that decision, and he left this project for me to try to work through, and it's been a real adventure at a certain level and a lot of fun.
Well, what are the major components of LA 23?
Well, a little backstory on that, Jim. We undertook this about a year ago. Our board charged us with developing a roadmap, and we decided to call it LA 23 as though it were a Louisiana highway, and a roadmap for the future. Our state is, as we all know, at a very, very pivotal point. We have elections that are coming up very, very shortly. Among them, we will be electing a new governor. We're also electing a lot of new legislators. And in that mix, we're going to have an opportunity to do some major things, some reforms that we feel are very important.
Now go ahead.
LABI has been out in front on this for a while, as you're well aware, Jim. You've been watching our progress in history. And we feel like this is an opportunity that we can't let go begging, and we've decided to kind of wade into some waters we've not waded into before.
What are some of the areas you're going where others have not?
Well, I think that when you look through the program, you're going to see a lot of things that you're going to think, LABI came up with that? You know, LABI is okay with this? We are suggesting that we need to have a tax on gasoline that is higher than we have right now if we're going to do anything by way of our infrastructure. I'm sure that we have members that aren't going to agree with that. We know that. But we feel like as a board, this is a way we need to go, and this is what our consultants are telling us needs to happen. We're looking at encouraging businesses to operate their own child care facilities. We're suggesting that there needs to be some serious attention paid to housing our workforce. We are going to be talking about new ways to go and recruit some of our folks back to Louisiana to work here. Those kinds of things are kind of different from anything you're seeing right now out there.
They're not boilerplate LABI issues.
Certainly not.
Why are you going this route?
Because this is what our experts, Ted Abernathy being among them, have indicated other states are doing with great success and the best path for us. And understand, Jim, we are a state that has languished at the bottom of lists we want to be at the top of for so very, very long. We've got a lot of work to get caught up with our competitors, the states around us, when it comes to economic development.
Again, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Now, some might think this is heresy for LABI to actually be in favor of a tax increase. And I recall a few years ago, the late, great Steve Carter, a Republican in the state legislature, proposed this. And he got close, but close doesn't cut it, as we know. And he didn't win. And now I would think with LABI behind it, if a gubernatorial candidate were to endorse this, whoever's elected, you'd have a good shot. Now, are you asking these gubernatorial aspirants, all seven of whom the major ones will be on the stage tonight in Lafayette, to get behind your plan?
We certainly are, but I am already aware that the ones that were in the debate last week roundly said no to the idea of a gas tax.
Including Stephen, right?
Including Stephen Wagasback, yes, sir. And we're aware that we've got work to do to build a consensus among the voters for something like this. There is going to necessarily have to be an educational process. And understand, Jim, this isn't something that we're going to accomplish next year. We start next year towards getting there, but we essentially have a six-year plan for making this happen.
Six-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have 6 years? We haven't had an increase in the gas tax since 1990.
Thank you. That is an excellent point and part of our reason for thinking that now might be the time.
Well, the gentleman who's with you, Ted Abernathy, he's worked in places that I wouldn't call liberal bastions, Kentucky, Missouri, Arkansas. He knows the Southeastern Conference pretty well, even though he lives in North Carolina. Now, are those states adopting these kinds of moves? Are they going with this?
Well, there's 31 different recommendations, and so pulling them out and putting them as a standalone, they're hard to get past. So this is a comprehensive reform. Missouri, I think, raised their gas tax 2 years ago for the first time in about 30 years. The reason to do it is not to have more taxes on people. I don't think anybody wants more taxes. But if you're a state that depends on logistics for your jobs and your roads are crumbling and you don't have the types of infrastructure that you need to keep the jobs, you're going to continue to lose people outside the state. And so you have to make decisions on where you think the jobs of the future are going to be and where young people are going to have opportunity in your state. And sometimes that means making tough choices.
877-217-5757. Later in the hour, we'll hear from General Russell Honoré, but we are visiting with Jim Patterson, who's heading LABI, and Ted Abernathy, who's a consultant from North Carolina, who has advised the state's largest business lobby on LA-23. They already have a beautiful brochure, the LA-23 issue, that includes all 31 planks. And I just got my copy, so obviously I'm not well-versed on all 31 planks. But the gas tax is certainly cutting edge for LABI. We've already had some listeners ask about where they can get a copy of this. It is available, I know, at your office at 5th and Main here in Baton Rouge. And any other way to do it? Do you have to go by the office?
I think if they would be good enough to reach out to us through labi.org, we'll be happy to get a copy to them one way or another.
And you already have a website, la23.org. That's yes. LA23, as in Pete Maravich's number, .org. 877-217-5757. Mike in Villa Del Rey in Baton Rouge. You're on with Jim Patterson and Ted Abernathy. Hello, Mike.
Hello. Good morning. My question is to the two gentlemen. They say, I've read where the lobbyist said that all their members pay above minimum wage. Why would they be against raising the minimum wage?
All right. What about the $7.25 minimum wage? That's a hot button issue. Most of the gubernatorial candidates, by the way, have said they are in favor of an increase, albeit not Stephen Wagasback and not Jeff Landry. But is LABI going to budge on that, or are we going to stay at $7.25 based on what you think is the correct way for us to do business in our state?
Our position, Jim, has always been that the economy and the marketplace will dictate what wages ought to be. Minimum wage is a one-size-fits-all kind of matrix that doesn't work practically, and it actually drives up the price of goods. In the end, the people that are technically benefited by a minimum wage increase end up in exactly the same position they already were in, because as wages go up, so do the prices of goods and services. They're no better off than when they started. We do not find, and if you take any good study, you do not find where anyone, any one state that has done this has seen any diminution in their poverty rates at all.
Well, but in our former home state of Arkansas, it's $11. They seem to be doing okay.
And they are more expensive if you go up there to visit. You'll find that you'll be paying a bit more for your services and your goods up there than you do here.
Jim, near LSU. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Patterson and Ted Abernathy.
I'd like to point out that the federal poverty rate is a fixed number that applies to everybody. But I think this issue of minimum wage is important. We all agree that we need to take care of our infrastructure. We've got climate change issues. We've got sea level rise. They're all against us on this. But we also need to worry about, you know, losing our tax base.
We got to take a break. We'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WRKF and WWNO. Your number is 877-217-5757. Jim Patterson of LABI, who is now the person large and in charge at 5th and Main and Baton Rouge, and Ted Abernathy, a consultant from North Carolina, are with us, and we're pleased that I think this is their first major initiative in presenting LA 23, which is designed to spur growth in our state. And Jim Patterson gave us the Cliff Notes version a few moments ago, and surprisingly, LABI is in favor of a gas tax. We haven't had one in 33 years in Louisiana. A six-year plan to try to get it done, and right now some gubernatorial candidates, of course, are saying no. Taxes are generally not popular when people are running for public office. But later in the hour, as in the next segment, we'll hear from General Honoré, and he's called carbon capture a white man's magic. He needs to be sold on this. Ted Abernathy, the consultant who's worked in Arkansas and Kentucky and Missouri, believes that it is the wave of the future. Why is it?
I don't know if it's the wave of the
future. Maybe it's the wave of the present, if it's working.
So the state of Louisiana has always been an important place for oil and gas and energy discussions. And so the report recognizes that there are new things happening in the energy field and believes that for the state to continue to have the impact from energy that it's had in the past, it has to keep looking forward at new technologies. I think that anybody who thinks they have the end answer on what carbon capture is going to be like in 10 years is just guessing. But that means that you need your state universities engaged, you need your business community engaged, and you need not to just advocate it to somebody else. You need to stay involved in it.
Ben in New Orleans. Ben, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine.
I was curious what the prospective governor was thinking about our high homeowners insurance rates and how we might be able to get them down because they skyrocketed after Hurricane Ida.
That's something that I think is a huge issue. Louisiana has in the past been a favorable climate for people who own homes. We have a homestead exemption, but now the cost of insuring those homes is going up, up and away, and that's not good and is an impediment. You just said, Jim Patterson, that you'd like to bring people here to stop this case in which we're actually losing citizens. For a while, we were gaining citizens, just not at the rate of the rest of the country. Now we're actually losing population, and high insurance rates could be a hindrance. What do you think?
Oh, without a doubt. And it's definitely part of the housing component when it comes to getting the workforce that we need here in Louisiana. We attempted in the last session to bring some legislation to resolve issues that are impeding the insurance, the development of our insurance market. We believe that more insurers, more competition, you get lower rates. And we had a good bill. We had worked it out with opponents, and at the last minute, it got scuttled, unfortunately. We think that we can get some of these things that are impeding the insurers from coming to Louisiana because we are different in a lot of respects compared to our mm-hmm. sister states. And once we do that, you're going to see those rates come down. And I think that the new insurance commissioner has already indicated that he would like to see a special session. I think the governors, the gubernatorial candidates, have indicated they would like to on insurance.
877-217-5757. If you would like to get in under the wire with Jim Patterson and Ted Abernathy, who are here presenting LA23, the strategic plan from the state's largest business lobby. How many members do you have, Jim?
2,000.
2,000.
2,000, yes.
Jim on I-12. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Morning, gentlemen. You stated in your synopsis that you're trying to stave off the outward migration. You're suggesting that businesses help pay for childcare and help pay for housing, and yet you're against increasing any wages, which is how all of those things get paid and why people are actually leaving the state. At what point do you guys give up on corporate welfare as some sort of panacea?
All right. The corporations get more than their fair share. I doubt that you're going to get an affirmative answer on this from Jim Patterson. And, of course, as a small business owner myself, I certainly know that it's tough out there. But it's tough out there for everybody. And you're representing the business lobby. Do you get more than your fair share? And I'm going to preface this because Bob Livingston, the former congressman, was on this show a few years ago and actually said that he thought there were more lobbyists for the poor than any other group in the country. And I thought, my goodness, this guy was almost Speaker of the House. Doesn't seem that way to me, but what about business? You have a powerful lobbying organization. Is it an unfair battle with others who do battle with you?
No, I don't think so. I think that they have their positions and points, and as we do, you've got to have businesses here in order for those individuals to have jobs. And those businesses are going to pay individuals what it takes to get them to come to work for them. They're going to provide them with benefits and all of that. This whole situation with the argument over the minimum wage misses the real point. We need to be upskilling individuals to better paying jobs. And we don't do that right here in Louisiana. We have advocated for that in the past in Louisiana. Or at the legislature, and lobby has, and we were actually thwarted by the secretary of the Department of Labor back then with this particular administration. She didn't want to see training dollars going to helping those at minimum mm-hmm. wage jobs that would perhaps advance them to higher paying jobs.
Andy in New Orleans. Hello, Andy. You're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, Andy.
Hi. We're checking to see why they have less federal pay. How did you say this? Sorry.
Locality pay.
Right? Less locality pay.
Federal government
in Louisiana.
Than other states.
And cities.
All right. I'm not sure where he is going with that, but I think he's talking about local politics, and in the state we divide the goodies between the state and the local authorities, and there's a dispute about ITEP being a classic example. Are you comfortable with this current governor's move to take some of the ITEP goodies away?
No, we weren't comfortable with that, and we remain uncomfortable with it. More from a process standpoint, Jim, than anything. There needs to be a streamlining of the process. ITEP is a program that we have to have in order to compete with other states, mm-hmm. and we need to make sure that it works smoothly. Otherwise, the businesses that it would be attractive to aren't going to be bothering with it.
Okay, final caller for Jim and Ted. Matthew in New Orleans. Hello, Matthew.
Hey, I'm just wondering what are some concrete examples of things you can do to lobby for lower and middle-class families, because a gas tax only hurts those families and not the richer classes.
All right. It's kind of like a sales tax. It hits people at lower ends of the income strata harder than those at higher ends. But our roads are in terrible shape, and we haven't had one in 33 years. So
we've got a much more, mm-hmm. a vaster plan, if you will, Jim, than than just the gas tax. We've got a lot of things on the tax side that we're going to be addressing, among them the individual income tax. And we are suggesting that maybe we could do away with it, phase it out over a period of time.
Well, and Richard Nelson, one of the candidates for governor, is pushing that.
Certainly.
Again, you can go to la23.org, and a listener before we part company asked you, Ted, you've worked in all these other states. Here we are, a state arguably with more natural resources than any state in America, and yet we are arguably the poorest state in America. How can that happen?
I think it happens with a lot of disruption of your economy over time. You've had weather disruptions. You've had political disruptions. A lot of different things have not gotten you where you want to be. I think that for your, several of your callers, the focus on improving the skills of all people in Louisiana for jobs that could pay more, could provide them a better foundation. But also the plan talks about working on their health, their safety. There's a lot in the plan that would help the individual citizen. So I encourage everybody to read all the parts of it and not just one piece or another.
LA23.org. You can pick up a copy if you come to 5th and Main at LABI's headquarters in Baton Rouge. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing and stepping into the guest chair is the guy who's celebrating his birthday. Second year in a row he has done this on September 15th. General Russell Honoré, born 1947, 15 September in Lakeland, Louisiana. You weren't born in a hospital, were you?
No, born at the house.
At the house.
At the, as the Fort Lauderdale hurricane came through Lakeland, Louisiana. Back then they used to name hurricanes after the place it landed. And it was called the Fort Lauderdale hurricane, and it made its way across the Gulf Coast. It was hitting Pointe-Coupee Parish with high winds when I was born.
Well, happy birthday to a great American who served 32 years in the U.S. Army at extremely high levels, a guy who brought Louisiana back from Katrina, General Russell Honoré, who had a great life, and I know the great city of Atlanta, and what a wonderful city that is. Louisiana could learn a lot by emulating Atlanta. They wanted you. You lived there for a little while, but you came back home. What was the catalyst to get you back here?
Well, you know, Atlanta has 17 Fortune 100 companies.
And, yep, and we have
one. And it might be sold soon. That being said, it was a lot of opportunities there. I stayed busy. The speaking circuit was good. The consulting business was good.
There are no hurricanes?
No, not to deal with specifically. And a calling happened to come home. There was a lot to do there, but there were a lot of people to do it. And, you know, after 37 years, 3 months and 3 days in the military and 40 years away from home, and wife wanted to be closer to her mom, who's 102 now. So we've avoided these years since 2010 when we moved back to be with her mother. And so it's been a good ride, and I'm glad I came back to Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. And I cut you short. It's 37, not 32 years. And in the old days, I don't know if it's true now, you have to get kind of a special dispensation when you go past 30 years, don't you?
Yeah, they changed some of that. They take you up to 40 now. I think you'll see Chairman Millie retiring. I think he's retiring at about 40 years of service, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who we don't have a replacement for right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have some listeners geared up, and we hit you with this last time you were on the show, but our friend in Alabama, the former football coach, Tommy Tuberville, is once again kicking up some dust, and lots of it, because as a result of his blocking, there are no military promotions going on. Basically, the U.S. military is at a standstill because Tommy Tuberville, junior senator from Alabama, is standing in the way. Yesterday, New York Times, near the arrival entrance of the outermost ring of the Pentagon, where visiting dignitaries are greeted with full honors, the hallways that usually house photos of senior military leaders are more bare these days. A section reserved for the country's most senior military leaders will be missing 4 photos out of 8 when General Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, steps down on October 1. In a space for a photo that would make history, a woman on that wall for the first time will be empty. For more than 6 months, Senator Tuberville has held up military nominations in protest of a Pentagon policy created to ensure that service members have access to abortions and other reproductive medical care. Hundreds of promotions have now been delayed in a battle that has all kinds of components. What do you make of this continuing battle and one senator, one of 100, standing in the way?
Well, I think it's a crying damn shame that one person had the power to stop the readiness of the United States military. You know, I was just cruising through the channels yesterday, not wanting to watch too much court news, and Private Ryan was on. And it brings me to tears when they're attacking that beach. And when they finally find Private Ryan, it speaks that our men and women don't fight for money. They don't fight for glory. They fight for a mission. And they raise their right hand and swear to the Constitution of the United States. They swear for service to protect and defend the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and obey the orders of the President of the United States, regardless of who he is. That being said, I find it offensive that this one senator, who's never spent any time in service, would come to the United States Senate and impose his will over an issue. If they got problems with it, then pass a law in the Senate or in the House to say so with the majority vote. Mm-hmm. But this is ridiculous. It's having an impact on readiness. It's affecting the morale of the military. And only reflect on that if you've never served on that movie, Private Ryan, on why people do what they do to defend our country. Unquestionably, on that one battle, D-Day, 9,000 casualties. And if we were to face a major shooting war right now with Russia or with North Korea or with China over Taiwan, we would not have the right leaders in place that's been nominated and selected by the president and the Joint Chiefs of Staff to lead our nation into battle. Imagine going through World War II without Eisenhower, without Bradley, without Halsey, without Nimitz. These are the type of people we're holding up in promotion to satisfy his political whim. And it's a crying damn shame. And I hope everybody in the country will start calling Senator Tuberville's number and tell him to release this, find another way to make his political point without holding up the readiness of the United States military, the greatest military in the world. He took issue with something he heard about a poem being read on a ship. What the hell? We sing songs on ships and in battalions all the time. But he took issues with that. That's a crying shame.
Mm-hmm. General, if you could move to this microphone. We're getting a little bit of feedback on that microphone for whatever reason, but I think we'll be in better shape. But I know people heard you loudly and clearly about Senator Tommy Tuberville, a native of Camden, Arkansas, by the way, who was born in 1954. And you said it, if he had the inclination to be a fighting man rather than play games with his life, football being the game that he played and coached, he could have suited up. Vietnam was still going on when he got out of high school, but instead he chose to go to Southern State University, the Mule Riders, I believe. That's their nickname. And now he's pontificating and saying the military is woke. You're saying he doesn't know what he's talking about.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. We've got soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, Coast Guardmen serving around the world in over 132 countries, air, land, and sea, are protecting our nation and our entire National Guard and Reserve here that we are very familiar with in the state. When our state was in trouble a week ago with wildfires, who do they call? The National Guard.
Right.
We're always on duty to protect this nation. And the nation pay a lot of money for that, over $800 billion a year. in the defense budget. And now we don't have the leaders to execute those orders as described by the executive branch and by the Congress. They've got a rule in our mission, too. They approve our missions. So here we are sitting around with one person, through his own discretion, holding up the vote. I think Senator Schumer need to call his hand and start the one-by-one nomination and approval and keep him locked in 7 days a week until they can put enough pressure on him to change his mind and try to find another way to execute his policy.
877-217-5757 for General Russell Honore. David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy birthday, General, and I thank you for your service to the nation I love. General, we're putting carbon into the atmosphere like we've never put it before. Much of that carbon is being absorbed by the oceans. That causes the oceans to acidify and kill the plankton, where much of our oxygen comes from, and the oceans are warming. How close are we to the point where the oceans will warm to the point where the oceans start to give up methane, and there's more methane at the bottom of our oceans than all the oil and gas reserves on the planet?
Well, you make a good point. I've heard scientists eloquently make that point in the past, but we're living in a world where people will not accept what you just said. I accept it because I believe it, and I've heard it before, and I've read it about it. What we're doing to the earth is dangerous, and some of it is irreversible. It's permanent. When we look at losing the permafrost and losing the ice cap and the amount of methane, that is because the earth is too hot. Yet we are constantly putting more industries in that create more greenhouse gases. The most dangerous of all of them is methane. And methane is biggest producers now is the fertilizer, which we produce a lot of in Louisiana, and the LNG plants. I know a lot of people are all up in the air about getting 7 LNG plants in Louisiana. But they are the highest producers of methane because when they process carbon, natural gas, they have to freeze it. When they freeze it, they burn off the methane out of that natural gas. And we sell that LNG overseas. We do not use LNG per se as an industrial enabler in Louisiana. We use natural gas. And when we sell natural LNG overseas, it has a tendency sometimes to drive up the price of natural gas for which we use to cool for electricity and for cooling and heating in America. So back to your point. We're on a bad trail, and I'm glad you called and shared that. And I hope those that are interested will read about it.
Okay, we'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, Friday Politics on WWNO 89.9 New Orleans and WRKF 89.3 Baton Rouge. I think the two top stations in Louisiana, managed by Paul Mawson, who has made this program available to both audiences on Fridays. And General Russell Honore is with us in the home stretch for the last quarter hour, 877-217-5757. William in New Orleans. William, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, General. Happy birthday. Thanks for your service. I got a question that has nothing to do with the topic. You graduated from Southern University, and I live in the area of North Baton Rouge, and it's considered a desert, food desert. And so I want your opinion on that.
Well, I think there have been several groups. Together Louisiana, Together Baton Rouge ran a campaign working with the mayors and the other civic organization. And I think something happening along that line, unless I've misread it, the city has found a food service, I don't want to misstate the name, that's going into North Baton Rouge that will hopefully solve that problem. But I'll have to call the mayor's office and ask them to make a statement on that, because if you don't know about it, that's a problem. But I think they've got a commitment from a grocery store to go and put one in North Baton Rouge.
And speaking of North Baton Rouge, the towering fire a few weeks ago at the Dow Chemical plant released enough of the potent cancer-causing chemical ethylene oxide to match a decade's worth of typical emissions at the plant. That's according to the company. So the people of that area, I think, are at some risk, having been in the midst of this, and perhaps by extension, everybody in Baton Rouge is. What do you think?
Well, this is the challenge we have with these environmental leaks. Some of those chemicals do not have an immediate impact on you. It may take months or years to start seeing a trend that people may have been exposed. And we're doing the homework now with our scientists to see the potential long-term impact. The challenge we have is that the company reported no off-plant impact. The state reported no sensing of chemicals downwind from the plant. And that becomes our problem because we don't have enough sensors around these plants, and the public don't get to see that information in real time like we would see it about a storm where the media could tell people to shelter in place or to leave. We don't have confidence in the system because, remember, a year ago almost, we had a chlorine leak over there where the company, the parish, and the state said, no problem, kuma matata, go home, don't worry about it. And the next morning, we find 30-some people ended up in a hospital from chlorine injury when all three branches of government were saying it wasn't a problem. So we have a level of trust in the reporting and the monitoring of these plants, and we will reintroduce a bill this year to better do air monitoring and to better inform people. Marathon plant that burned a few weeks ago, they went hours without informing the public that they had a fire. And that's been reported in the paper and documented the number of hours they went before they told the public that there was a fire. We've got to fix that. We've introduced bills repetitively in the Louisiana legislature, and they all get killed in committee.
Henry in Baton Rouge. Henry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, General. General, I wish you a very happy birthday. I hope you got quite a few more left in you because we sure need you. I got a question for you. Considering that Tuberville is giving aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States, would you consider or would you think I'm going overboard in considering his activities treasonous?
Well, the people write about that all the time, but he's operating inside the Senate rules. And until they change him, there's not much we could do other than the leader of the Senate to go on and work around him and do each nomination one at a time. And there are over 600 is the number I heard yesterday when you create the downranks of those who are waiting to get promoted to go to new positions. So it's horrible, but they're going to have to fix that in the Senate. And he listened to Chuck Schumer yesterday. He wants the Republicans to fix it. He don't want to take the lead on it. And I think that's playing a little politics on his side. But he need to buckle up and lock them down, which he has the power to do, and start voting one at a time.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to get in with General Honore. And listener notes correctly that Tommy Tuberville, a year ago, the senator from Alabama, did not know the three branches of government. James in Metairie. James, good morning.
Well, good morning to you, Jim, and happy birthday, General.
Thank you.
Your intense interest in the environment has well known. And WWL-TV had a wonderful story yesterday concerning this threat caused by a saltwater wedge, which is saltwater moving up the Mississippi River due to the low level of the river caused by environmental problems, namely drought, in which we currently are in a drought and a drought way upriver. If this continues and it's moving up the river by about 1.5 miles a day, it's threatening the water supply of Plaquemines. It could someday threaten the water supply of this area here in New Orleans. Without fresh water, we cannot survive as a species.
Yeah, to answer your question, I would not vote for any politician that does not believe in climate change. It is the most challenging problem we've got to solve nationally and globally. So right off the top, if there's any hesitation that they don't believe that what we're doing, some of the man-made activities, are having an impact on where we live, how we live, the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we eat, don't vote for them as a top of your ticket. Number two, the Corps of Engineers is working frantically to come up with a solution to try and block that by putting some submersive dams to prevent that water from coming north. But we've got to see how effective that is, because even their best efforts could fail and we could end up in a perilous situation, as you described, not having access to fresh water because of the salinity, or have to change our entire technology to be able to clean that water so it's drinkable. The Earth is almost entirely covered by water, majority. Only 1% of the Earth's water is drinkable. Think about that. And we flush our toilets and put in the Mississippi River. We discharge our plants in the Mississippi River. We run off industrial waste into the rivers, where everybody south of Baton Rouge have to get their water out of the Mississippi River. We've got to be more respectful of our water and our discharges.
Stuart, downtown Baton Rouge, please be concise. Stuart, you're on.
Well, thank you, Jim, General, and the audience. Good morning, General. Wonderful birthday to you, sir. And as one of the callers indicated, we hope you have many, many more. We now know that you're not going to run for governor. That's a travesty for our state. However, General, not to put you on the spot, what do you think of the gubernatorial candidates, and are you in favor of one?
Well, I would say this. From what I've heard and seen, most of them deny science and they deny climate change. But they are advocate for fossil fuel, which we need, but we've got to transition from. And that has to be addressed. I heard the leading candidate earlier in the week. He came to a group I spoke to up at Marksville, and he sounded like a different guy. He spoke about two things, about crime and about education. He didn't speak about his attack on what he called wokeness, about diversity, inclusion. He didn't speak of that. He didn't speak about his attack on trans kids, who are the most persecuted young people in our community. And he didn't speak about putting people in jail because of abortion or putting doctors. He didn't speak about that to this minority group. He spoke about education.
All right. What about, are you supporting a candidate?
Not at this time. I do have a candidate. I'm looking strongly at. I'm an independent. I can tell you, if you don't believe in climate change, I'm not voting for him. And I think that narrows it down to one person.
All right. Skip in Jefferson. Skip, good morning.
It's an honor to speak with General Honore. I would just like to say very quickly, I remember during Katrina, and I consider him one of the major heroes of Katrina, when he told his troops to lower their weapons.
Thank you, sir. That's 18 years ago. I was still in Louisiana 18 years ago, walking the streets of New Orleans, and maybe even on my way over to Hurricane Rita.
Don't get stuck.
We moved there too.
Don't get stuck on stupid.
Yes, sir. Thank
all
you,
right,
sir.
All right, Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Hello, Kevin.
Yes, I wanted to know. Louisiana have all this oil and out in the Gulf, and we have a lot of natural gas, and then we have the mouth of the Mississippi, and Mississippi River, gambling and everything. Why we don't take control over our own oil?
That's a good question. Here's the stump speech I got on that. We're the second or third largest energy producer in America, but we're the second poorest state, only the Mississippi, and they don't have oil and gas. We're being ripped off. It's a bamboozle. They get tax breaks. They don't pay their share of royalties, and they leave abandoned oil wells. We're being ripped off is what's happening to our state.
We
should have the best schools in America.
Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay tuned.